He's on the line.
Yes, the governor of Massachusetts, Charlie Baker. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm doing fine. How are you?
Very good, sir. Have you spoken to Brendan Moss this morning?
Yeah.
Did he tell you about what our overhead signs say here in Springfield?
Yeah.
Did he make the suggestion that you cancel this interview and never talk to us again?
Actually, that was my idea.
Well, you know, he wrote me an initial email that said that the problem had been fixed and that for 30 days it was giving real-time construction updates in the Springfield area around the viaduct project. And I took issue with it because it's unfortunately not true. And then just as we're discussing that this morning, then all of a sudden we get a message saying wicked bad travel Friday on the Commonwealth Avenue Bridge. But my question...
Which is important, but not so much important for people out here in Springfield.
Look, obviously, after my last chat with you guys, we talked to the folks at DOT. They acknowledged that they had issues with the signage out there. We said, well, you really ought to fix it. They said it was fixed. Obviously, it's not. And I got some homework to do there.
Okay.
And I apologize to people who have had to deal with the fact that, obviously, not only is it not being used for the intent and purpose to which it was intended, but it may be putting out information that doesn't do anybody in the greater Springfield area any good and may just confuse them.
Well,
so I apologize for that.
I don't know. I think we've all learned our lessons now that left lane travel is illegal and really only for passing.
And to avoid Commonwealth Avenue at all costs.
I got to tell you, I don't know anyone in Massachusetts who actually believes that.
Yeah, oh, I know. They all think the left-hand lane is for moseying. Sir,
and the right-hand lane is for making faces at people in the left-hand lane.
Right. Exactly. As a former member of the law enforcement community, and I brought this up with you one time, about how it takes more hours of training in Massachusetts to get a license to cut hair than to carry a gun. It was very good. The bill you signed the other day, adding a $2 fee to rental cars that will go directly toward municipal police training.
Yeah, there's a bunch of different proposals that were made to enhance and improve the amount of training and the funds that are available to support training through the Municipal Police Training Council. We made a series of proposals. The one the legislature landed on was this one, and I'm not a big fan of raising fees, but in this case, we made an exception because that program was the number one priority for the chiefs and many of the folks in law enforcement, and given some of the awful and terrible things that have happened in that community over the course of the past year. So we thought that was worth the compromise. Those funds will be available to support a whole variety of training initiatives and, put them out to everybody who has been part of some of these really terrible tragedies that have taken place in Quincy and Weymouth and down on the Cape in Yarmouth.
Yeah, and speaking of which, unfortunately, you've now attended your second funeral of a police officer killed in the line of duty. And I know your concern is very much the same as our mayor, Mayor Sarno, is here, about judges giving bail to defendants who have either long criminal records or very, very serious charges against them. And I know many politicians would like to see a change to that. What's your opinion on that issue?
So, I mean, the long story short here is you really can't... Historically, people have used high bail as a vehicle to hold somebody. And the courts basically ruled that you can't use a high bail as a mechanism to prevent somebody who hasn't been convicted of something yet from being able to await trial, somewhere other than in prison. And the argument on that one was that makes it possible for rich people to make bail, but poor people can't. And so what we need to do, and we're talking to people in law enforcement about this right now, is expand and enhance the tools available to DAs and to the courts around dangerousness. We all know that after some really awful, horrible domestic violence crimes, we basically created a framework for DAs and judges and courts to hold people on domestic violence charges if they were deemed to be dangerous, okay? We need to take that that notion and that model and apply it more broadly and give more tools to the courts to be able to hold people for dangerousness. If we're not going to use high bail because that's a penalty against people who don't have resources, then we need to create quickly an alternative to that that makes it possible for the courts to hold people who they believe are dangerous pending trial. That's where I'm coming from on this. And we've been talking to folks in the law enforcement community and the criminal justice system, and we want to get it done. There were a couple of measures associated with this that were part of the larger discussion about criminal justice reform. They didn't make it through the process, but this is something that's clearly on everybody's mind at this point in time, and we need to get it done because it's obvious that the way we're doing it now doesn't work. Just doesn't work. And Mayor Sarno has been an extremely articulate advocate of changing this, some of the rules of this game, and I'm with him on that one.
There was a editorial earlier this week in the Boston Globe saying some conservatives are fuming that Baker is too far left. As a governor who has had pretty good approval ratings in his own state, and is looking for a reelection. When you see something like this, how would you respond to it? I mean, do they have a point? Do you see what they're getting at, or do you think it's just candidate bashing?
I guess what I would say is that generally speaking, let's start with this. I got plenty of friends who have lots of folks in their family who everybody doesn't like, and who doesn't like everybody in their family. All right, let's just start with that. It's kind of the smallest universe you can think of here. When you get into things like political parties, do I agree with everybody in the Republican Party? No. Do I agree with a lot of the people in the Republican Party on many things? Sure. But the same thing goes with the Democrats, right? There's Democrats I don't agree with and Democrats I do agree with sometimes. I think this notion that, everybody has to be with everybody 100% of the time is just not, it's not realistic, and it doesn't represent the way regular people, normal people think about things. And my view is really simple. I'm a fiscal conservative. I'm a social moderate. I believe the goal of government is to actually get things done and to compromise and collaborate, because that's the way our founders intended for it to work. And there are people in the Republican Party, a lot of people in the Republican Party in Massachusetts who agree with me on this. Just as there are people who are independents who agree with me on this, and there are people who are Democrats who agree with me, and there are people who don't. And then there are specific issues where different people have different points of view about how to solve certain problems. But I'll tell you this, we said when we ran that we were going to be bipartisan, that we were going to collaborate with people, and that we were going to focus on building strong communities and a great economy across the Commonwealth, and that we were going to work for 100% of the people. And I would argue that most of the time, that's been exactly the way we've approached the job, whether you agree with the decisions we've made or not. But certainly along the way, that approach is going to make some people unhappy. And I get that. But I would argue that I wish more people in public life approached this work the way we do, which is that this isn't always a we-they thing. It's supposed to be about the work of the people who put you there in the first.
Oh, you gotta be
Are you kidding
me?
He was on a roll too.
Well, you know what? Let's pad for a minute in the hopes that he calls right back.
Because
that was weird. I mean, there was a time when the connection was bad. There he is, and it was sounding like we might lose it.
We're getting him back.
Yeah.
We're getting him.
All right.
Okay. All right. Hello, sir.
Sorry, I hit a bad cell. Sorry.
That's okay. All right.
I got distracted by a road sign.
Yeah, right.
How many votes did you just lose?
it's July 25th, and I have a lot of friends who were not fortunate enough to have cancer and open heart surgery, so they have not been able to get medical marijuana or marijuana of any kind. And there does not seem to be any reason to believe that legalized marijuana is going to be available in any time in the near future. Is this seems to be going wrong. The budget was supposed to include $63 million of marijuana revenues, and that's all been thrown off now, too. Is there a problem here?
Start with the first part, John. I still think medical marijuana is available to anybody who talks to a clinician and gets a card to purchase it, isn't
it? It is, yeah, and that's what I said. But I said, okay, you know, for those people I know who weren't fortunate enough to have cancer.
I see. I've said all along that the commission had a big assignment and a difficult task, but that I thought they were moving at a pretty significant pace on it, and that I thought their approach generally, which was to start with the stuff that was what I would describe as sort of tier one and fundamental, was the right place to start. And I think today they are approving a whole series, or reviewing to approve, I assume, a whole series of applications for growers and for a number of retailers. And look, some people would like it to go faster. My view on it is that the commission's going to go at whatever pace they think they need to go at to get it done and to get it done right. And I think the revenue issue is, you know, it's a little bit concerning, but in the grand scheme of things, we collect about $28 billion in tax revenue every year in Massachusetts, approximately. You know, whether the marijuana industry produces, you know, 25 million, 15, 30, 60, on the margin it matters. But in the grand scheme of things, it's not that big a deal.
But on the, when people are starting to finger point on this issue, though, you know, everyone seems to be focusing on the local guys or the local growers or the dispensaries, rather than on the state, you know, for many people.
There's no labs.
For many people, it's really the state that's been dragging their heels on this.
I don't think the commission has been dragging their heels. They're pursuing this, from what I can tell, at a pretty significant clip. They meet virtually almost all the time. They didn't meet for the past 2 weeks because they felt they needed to do a bunch of heads down, what I would describe as sort of administrative work. But they are setting up a regulatory framework for a whole new industry, and I don't think we should forget about that. And they are trying to learn from some of the lessons in other states where people basically said, look, we missed some things coming out of the gate and we were never really able to fix those. And I think they're trying to be what I would describe as deliberate here. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, because in the long run, you want them to get this right. If getting it right in the long run means it takes a little longer to get it right in the short run, I don't think that's a big price to pay there. And the final thing I would just say is it's legal and it's going to be legal, and there's going to be a regulated market here. And that's just the way it is. And they're just trying to make sure they get it right. And I don't spend that much time on commission stuff because they're completely independent from us. But generally speaking, I think the motive and the intent of the people who are involved in this is pretty much straightforward and appropriate.
As a final point before we let you go, I was reading the other day also that you're about to sign a bill that will change some archaic laws here in Massachusetts, one of which is surrounding abortion. But there are other things included in that, and I've read up on it, and I just want to thank you on behalf of myself and Tim Rook and many others, your plan to sign this bill. I want to thank you for finally making it legal for us to fornicate with our neighbor's wife.
There's a question about whether it's legal and whether it's a good idea. And I think the most appropriate way for you to think about this one is that just because something's legal doesn't mean it's a good thing.
Right. Good point, sir. Good point.
You got to start somewhere.
And I think when you consider the kind of level of person we're talking about in this discussion, the John O'Briens and Tim Rooks of the world.
It makes sense.
All right, sir.
You guys never cease to amaze me.
That's what we're here for, sir. That's absolutely true. The governor of Massachusetts, Charlie Baker. Good to talk to you, sir.
All right, guys. Take care. Bye-bye.
8:47 with Bax and O'Brien at Rock 102.